I don't think Caddy should be able to line up players at all. Can you imagine how weird it would look like in other sports? Like, I was watching, you know, like watching March Madness, like the coach runs out to the free throw line, like, whoa, hold on. Hold on. Like, here we go. No. We don't do that in other sports.
But a teammate could, because they're on the same team.
What is up, everybody? How you living? No putts given. Tony and Chris, we're back. Red and green on top. We got a little red hat, little white and green. It's not that time of year, Tony, but it's like Christmas in March.
It is, yeah. It looks like Christmas outside now. More Christmas than it was at Christmas.
Yeah, somebody said we got like another 2 or 3 inches of snow this weekend too, and I said, you know, snow is way more magical on December 25th than like March 25th.
2 to 3 inches is pansy snow.
Yeah. Agreed.
16 and a half at my house.
So. But I'll be playing golf on Friday, Tony.
Yeah,
and you
like
won't.
March so. Got me, man. Like every so year too, but usually it's like you get into March and you're like, we're done. And you get 6 inches on like March 10th, March 15th, and it delays opening day by a week or so, and it's frustrating. But man, to get like, what was it, the 23rd, 24th, I guess 23rd, to get 16 and a half inches. I believe the appropriate, I think the common phrase is nut punch. It's just a nut punch.
That's why the Germans came up with the term Schadenfreude, right? I experience joy at your misfortune. So anyway.
It's not cool.
Almaty, we got to talk about him. Valspar, the paint tournament. Do you have caddy issues, Tony? Are there caddy issues that we need to discuss? I think there are. We're going to welcome Philip Bishop, who oversees an awful lot of our hard goods testing.
Club
He's
going to
come
guy,
on
yeah.
briefly, chat through some testing results on putters, and then a couple other random topics. We got a little look at what TGL might look like next year. You have a challenge that you'd like to throw out to listeners. We're going to go for some fan engagement, and I want to know if you really think Callaway's.
We're going to do that. We're doing that this week, or are we going to tease it this week and do it next week?
I think we're going to tease it this week and then do it next week. So we'll tease it.
Yeah.
We'll give a little bit of an overview. Suckers. So, anyway, the paint tournament, Valspar paint. I know maybe a lot of people didn't as many, you know, with it being March Madness, and I had 13 different screens going, and so it was kind of cool to see. But Peter Malnati, this is not a name that most anyone is probably going to recognize unless they were looking like
it's definitely not like there's Tiger, there's Rory, and there's Peter Malnati.
Although
if you told me he was like a character on The Sopranos, I might believe it, but...
And don't confuse him with like Lou Malnati's like pizza joint, you know, in Chicago. Some people might do that, but beyond, and we'll talk through his bag, he's a title, a staffer. He hasn't won a golf tournament in
3,058 days. Well, I guess now he hasn't won a golf tournament in one day.
Well, yeah, two. We have
three when you're watching.
It'll be three days or whatever, but...
Needs to get his crap together big time.
I mean, there's a number of different things about this particular win at this tournament that are kind of interesting. Well, certainly interesting. Definitely remarkable. And so we're going to chat through just a couple of those. But what was your first take on this? I thought this was pretty interesting.
I love it. First of all, like, dude's wearing a bucket hat. So I'm already completely with him.
We should have worn bucket hats today for him.
I'll have to talk to JD about that. We've got, he won with a yellow Pro V1 golf ball. And not because like he's needs the visibility or he noticed some performance difference, but because his kid liked it.
Right?
And so he's playing a yellow ball because his kid liked it. I absolutely love that. And then you look at his bag. Like, it's amazing. Like, it's an all Titleist bag, but it's like, we're on a timeline here. I'm going to go through it. So yellow Pro V1X, to be precise. So, TSR3 driver. So R3, so 10 degrees. TSI3, fairway wood. So we're going back in time a little bit. This is one generation. Now this, wild.
The next one is the one that I side with.
Oh, this is so good. 818H2 hybrid. It's just 818,
that's not a zip code, not an area code. I mean
this is old school.
This is
it goes back to, I would guess, just based on the number, on the name, circa 2018,
circa 1980s,
which was, I mean, in my mind 2018 wasn't that long ago. In my mind 2018 was like 2 years ago, but then you start counting back and you're like,
like six.
Yeah. So roughly. I mean, this is like,
this is
not the latest, most current Titleist technology, but that 818 series, that's one that a lot of people love. I could see if you're going to hold on to a Titleist hybrid, like, I can understand why that would be the one. Then you look in his bag, some of the stuff we've talked about. So T200 four iron.
Yep.
T150 five iron. And then 6 through 9. In the T100, so that blended set that we've talked about, and the idea of like, hey, as you progress through the bag, you might need to make some adjustments to keep your speed up, your descent angles where you need them to be, that kind of thing. And then for all the old stuff, right? Again, for the i3 and the 6 year old, however many year old H2 hybrid, SM10 wedges. I doubt you'll find many tour players playing old wedges, and if they are, they're playing new stock of old, you know, replenished inventory, if you will, new stuff that's still on the van. Nobody is out there with wedges that have been in
an original issue SM9 or SM8 or something.
That's not, if you want to fail miserably on tour, I think not having freshies in the bag is probably a good way to do it. But yeah, I mean,
no, for sure.
I love the bucket hat. I love the bag makeup. This is a fun one.
What do you take from that in terms of where the stuff is new and where the stuff is old? Because to me, that tells kind of a cool story that I think more golfers would be wise to potentially think through. And I get it. We test stuff every year, right? Because there's the latest and greatest in these things. But we also say very, very clearly over and over and over that year-over-year changes are rarely significant enough to warrant any sort of a repurchase or upgrade from a performance standpoint. Like that those two things can coexist, right?
And a TSI 3 it would is not ancient by any stretch of the imagination, right? It's creeping towards 2 years old, kind of a situation. Well, I guess, you know, go back farther than that. TSR is creeping towards 2 years, so 3 to 4
so
range.
TSI,
but
almost 4, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God. But I think for average golfers, like the 3-wood, I've said it before, like if you've got a 3-wood that you can, never mind optimize, like I don't care if you're optimized with a 3-wood, does not make a difference to me. Like I am not chasing magic numbers on a launch monitor. If you've got a 3-wood as an average golfer that you can hit consistently, keep it. Just keep it. And again, like, You really got to have better to make that change. Quantifiable better, not just on a launch monitor. Take it on the course. It's got to prove it, because that's one that is tricky to mess with. Because as we know, average golfers just struggle to hit a 3-wood decently as an average range. Like, yeah, that was decent. That's good. Like, decent is good for a lot of us. So I could see why, even at the tour level, you would hold on to one a bit longer than, you know, you would need to. And then the hybrid, that's another one where, especially, you know, when you're dealing with, I mean, he has moved into some faster irons at that end of the bag, you know, the 4-iron, the 5-iron, but that's another one where, unless you're really chasing some kind of distance change or trying to make a major change, a hybrid, especially a long hybrid that works well for you, hold on to it. Just hold on to it. Cuddle up to it at night. Bring it into the bedroom.
Treat it well. Buy it gifts. Yeah.
Take it out to a nice dinner once a month. Keep it happy.
That treat your hybrid better than Tony treats his wife. That's the
low bar. Hey, we went out to dinner this weekend. I want to interrupt briefly. We went out to dinner. It wasn't like the nicest restaurant in town. It wasn't a bad restaurant. It was one of my favorite places. Not. Nice restaurant. Yeah. But there was this dude at the next table. I'm ballparking him at 60. And his wife is like, she's wearing like jeans, but a nice sweater. And they're out with friends and they're wearing like, again, jeans, but button up shirt, like business casual to semi-casual, that range. And dude is head to toe, no joke, in a white tracksuit with just a little bit of black accents. And I was like, that's my dude. That is who I want to be. So yeah, life goals, man. Yep. I'm going to be white tracksuit guy. I have seen the future. I love it. Anyway, next.
You've seen the vision. Very quickly, my take on that, we'll go to the next one, is I think three things that every golfer could look at his bag and here's a takeaway is replace your wedges. They're, you have to treat wedges like disposable. Dave. Yeah, like disposable razors, right, to a degree. It's like particularly your, you know, two highest lofted wedges. So if that's 5660 for you, if it's, you know, 54, 58, whatever those are. Huge benefit there. Number two, you get 14 clubs, right? And every club has a purpose. And if you find a club that does that job really, really well, it's okay to keep it until it breaks and or until something is clearly and quantifiably better. And the likely place you're going to see that in a golf bag first is going to be that 3-wood, 5-wood, 7-wood, hybrid, that type of space. Like I said, the guy you don't play for money is somebody that has an old 3-wood with a dime size wear spot on it. That dude is scary. And that guy might be Peter Malnati. Like, you just, you know. And then make sure you are playing the latest technology that you can with a driver that fits you, because that is where, you know, if you're playing something that is 5, 7, 12 years old, you're probably giving up a decent amount of performance there. And then finally, if your kids like something, so long as it isn't like, you know, a Kirkland ball or something, play it. I think that's the message. I think
it worked out. It definitely worked out. There is no shame in playing a yellow golf ball.
Caddy issues, Tony. We got to talk about this. Sean Fairholme.
Who's usually wrong.
Who's typically wrong. Habitually wrong. We can't say that now because I guess pose it this way. He wrote an article. We'll link to it. But basically, idea being is we got to talk about the role of the caddy in professional tournaments and things. And my Lord, when you look at and the examples that we use in this one is, are Wyndham Clark.
We're not going to pick on Wyndham Clark, but we are going to pick on Wyndham Clark.
Yeah, and nothing personal, Wyndham. Nothing personal at all. But good Lord Almighty, it feels like your caddy is doing too much on the greens. Lining you up. What's your take on this? Is it too much? Is it too much, or am I being hyperbolic for
this? Man, I think we got some great feedback from our readers on this article. We'll talk about some of their ideas, because I look at it, I was like, I kind of agree with that. But my perspective on this prior to reading our readers' comments was kind of like, well, kind of depends on how that player talks about his caddy in broader terms. Great example that I would give, Jordan Spieth, right? When he's talking about decisions made on the course and Michael Greller, it's always we,
they
right?
are very much
that
a team.
Is a team. Yep. And so, you know, granted, one member of that team gets paid way more than the other, but if you're a tour player and your mindset is, yeah, that caddy, that guy, he is on my team, he and I are a team, the two of us,
yeah,
then maybe within reason, yeah, you should be able to get plenty of help. I don't know when it gets to the point. I don't have a problem with the caddy with the wedge and doing all that stuff. I think where I would draw the line, and I haven't seen it get to this part, is when it gets to what I would call country club pro creepy, where, you know, he's like, all right, kind of lining you up, getting a little touchy feely, maybe trying to get a little, you know, a little that going on. But it's not to that extent. But yeah, I could see why some people think maybe, just maybe, it's a, you know,
yep,
you're a pro, you should be able to do this on your own kind of thing. So
I'm going to take a little firmer stance on this one. I don't think caddies should be able to line up players at all. Here's where I'm going with this. So my thinking is this, and I did breeze through Sean's article a little bit, and he does link to rules of golf, which, as we know, are so many are subject to interpretation. Some are are woefully outdated. Some are
clear it right up.
Overly complex, and some make no sense at all. So I am not like, I don't treat the rules of golf like as an infallible, you know, religious document or something like that. But when we talk about skill, like, so if I'm out playing with my buddies, with whomever else, I have to line myself up on every shot. I can't use things to help me line my
Well, you don't have a caddy.
Right. Now,
and
I
that
could.
Goes back to what I always talk about, right? There's the rules, and then there's the application thereof.
Right.
No caddy.
Right.
You can't do
so,
what they can do.
In the most elite portion of the game, the professional golfers, what if we took this as a situation where we said, hey, we feel like the best players in the world should be able to do these 10 things for themselves, no matter what. And one of those would be lining up. You get advice, you get yardages, you get that information, but can you imagine how weird it would look like in other sports? Like, I was watching March Madness, like the coach runs out to the free throw line, like, whoa, hold on. Like, here we go. No, we don't do that in other sports.
But a teammate could, because they're on the same team, right? And they're
but
out there together.
But how weird would that, like, hey, buddy. Yeah, I mean, I get it. I see that part, but I really would love to see the golfer. I don't really care, I guess, at the end of the day, but it's like, for the love, like, you should be able to line yourself up, like, you know.
Let me give you two ideas from our comment section.
All right, give me two ideas.
Here's the first one.
Number one.
This is the most aggressive one.
Okay.
Get rid of caddies entirely.
Yep.
And yep. if our buddy Michael Collins was dead, he'd be rolling over in his grave over this, I'm sure.
Right.
But get rid of the caddies. You don't need them. Right? Push carts. We can do that now.
Sure.
I think it's a little extreme. Again, I kind of like the idea of the caddy is on my team a little bit. But it's an idea. It's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one I like better. And again, you have to be okay with the fact that there's going to be the rules and the application thereof will vary between the professional game and what us scrubs play. But if you want to talk about an area, a facet of the game that lends itself exceptionally well to a shot clock, it's all right there. Everybody's in the same place. You're not moving around. So it's like, hey, as soon as you address your putt for the first time, I don't care how long it is,
mm-hmm.
30 seconds, 40 seconds, 45 seconds, no more than that.
12. You have 12 and seconds.
Whatever that is, within that window, you can do whatever you want. If you want to have your caddy come in and take a few practice swings with his wedge, if that's how you want to spend your time, if you want to have him line you up, however you want to do it,
yep.
But you've only got X amount of time to get through it. I am so good with that. And not for anything, you and I both, right? Neither one of us have a problem with aim point at all.
No, I
aim
love
point aim fans, point. But for those who complain it. About it, shot clock clears up your aim point problem because, you know, you can do this all day if you want,
right?
But you can't do it all day because you're on the clock. And so figure it out and go. Move it along, guys.
Yeah, I like that one. The other one I would love to see is I would love to see a golf tournament where they experiment with this. It could be, you know, they probably won't do it on the PGA Tour, but, man, I would love to see PGA Tour tournament. Might as well. Let's do it. Let's call it a PGA Tour tournament. And if you're a player, you have two options. Number one, no caddies at all. Like you said, that one, you just go with that. Or number two, it's the most the caddy can do is give yardages, help club you, you know, rake, bunkers, divots, that
club
kind of
you.
Stuff. Yeah.
That was a bad well, shot.
Yeah, like caveman you. But they can't help or offer any advice beyond that. So like a very restrictive thing, and I get their, you know, application, blah 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 blah, like you said, but it would be interesting. Like, I just feel like getting to the point where like the caddies are doing too much with some of that, and I think it does hurt pace of play. It certainly doesn't help it. I mean, it certainly isn't making things go any faster when, like you said, you have your caddy up there getting really close to it as they're lining up to hit it, you know, like they're going to hit a putt with your wedge, going, okay, now I'm sensing this, I'm feeling this, and like, why is the caddy doing that? Shouldn't the player be doing that? Why can't we just have players do the things that players are supposed to
be out there
do?
With cat lasers? Aim right there.
Yeah,
right
exactly. Exactly. Maybe other people have other ideas, but I think that would be really kind of cool. Anyway, let's move on to blade putter testing. We're going to bring in one Philip Bishop, as you're grabbing him. Like I said, Philip oversees tremendous amount of things in terms of the world of equipment testing at my golf spot. So not only is he in charge of writing up results, articles, etc., he is there day by day. Tester by tester, hour by hour, swing by swing, data point by data point, watching all of this stuff go down. So when we say, hey, this test was like, you know, 18,412 shots, God bless him, Philip got to see 18,412 shots. And, that's just kind of part of the gig. So we're going to bring him on here. We're going to talk a little bit about putter testing results.
Whoa, right on cue. That was amazing.
That was actually pretty good.
We could not have planned that better. What's up, Phil?
What's up, Phil? How you living?
Did I come in right on cue?
Close enough. That was pretty damn good.
I was making sure I clicked all the right buttons. I haven't done that before.
So. Yeah. Well, if you clicked all the right buttons, you're way ahead of where Tony and I were the first time we did on this one. So that's good. I just gave people a little intro in terms of who you are and what you do and all that kind of stuff. And man alive, we appreciate everything that you guys are doing there. And like I said, it's, you know, people love, I was trying to tell somebody else kind of about, it's like testing's a little bit like sausage, where, you know, maybe isn't necessarily all that fun to watch it get made, but you sure love the results.
Yeah. Or
you're a sausage guy. You get to see every bit of it get made, but we're going to talk putter testing results here a little bit. So, we're talking blade putter, so let's just launch right into kind of the first part of it, which is, what happened? Who won? Like, what's going down? Give us that part.
All right. Drum roll, I guess, right? So the winner is going to be the Evenroll Neo Classic ER2.
Evenroll Neo Classic. For those of you that don't love word parts, that's like new classic. Yeah. ER2. I'm gonna make an argument, or at least throw something out there. This might be the winningest putter of all time in my golf spot blade putter testing. If we take podium results, that stuff, like, holy cow,
it's a fair argument for sure,
man. Okay, so number one spot, Evenroll ER2. Give me the next two. Well, just give me top three.
It's about to get weird.
It is about to get weird.
Okay. All right.
And I know we'll kind of dive into this a little more. So next up, runner up is going to be the Zebra Black Milled Series 003.
Zebra Black Milled 00. I feel like we're doing like play calls, like in the NFL, like swap, you know, swap to twins left, Z motion, X.
Well, we are talking about zebra stripes, right? It's got zebra stripes on the actual putter, so.
So we got zebra, which some people might go, oh, I played a zebra like decades ago. Same company, but retooled, but not. Same name, same brand, I guess. Different company, ownership, execution. All that stuff. Spot number two. All right, give me number three.
All right, so third place is going to be T squared PS 912.
Excuse me, what?
All these have exceptionally long names. Was that the number one criterion testing this year? You just said, well, hey,
our new scoring system ranks by number of letters. It makes it so much easier.
I didn't add any type in there either. So.
Yeah. There's some people out there that might believe it. So for the record, that's a joke. That's not how we test.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Go
ahead. Yeah.
We have a top three that, Evenroll, there should be no surprise that Evenroll year in and year out does extremely well in our testing. There's certainly some years that it didn't do so well, and, you know, whatever the case may be. So yeah, but then also seeing two putters, a Zebra had an iconic name behind it, prestigious back in the day, I believe it was 1976 when they were kind of first introduced, just doing a little research on my end, doing the write-up.
Hey, Philip, what year were you born?
1991.
Which is roughly 15 years after that, so.
I wasn't even thought of, which is, you know, my dad was in like high school at that point, so, you know. But yeah, so, and then you see, you know, Zebra is obviously iconic, and then T-Square, this is the first time we've ever tested, to my knowledge, T-Square. So, again, we'll dive into that a little later, but one of many that we've tested for the first time in this year's Most Wanted. So.
Yeah, that's, so, I mean, this is to one of these things we try and do. Like, there are brands that you absolutely positively have to have in a putter test, but, you know, in what has become increasingly more of a social media driven world, we're kind of always like checking Facebook and Instagram and Twitter for these smaller brands that are kind of popping up. And so, you know, it seems like every couple of weeks I'll send something to Philip and be like, hey, are we looking at this weird thing that just showed up in my Facebook feed?
Yeah, and I know we're talking blade putters, but mallet putters are going to have more of that just kind of non-mainstream option in there. Plus, it's just more putters overall, too. But,
yeah, so a couple of questions for you, too, Phil, because, yeah, people will go to the main site article. There's going to be a ton of information there. You know, for people that saw our driver overview video, separate videos, we're going to have more of those this year where we go through, you know, top five in different categories and go kind of line by line, feature by feature. So there'll be more opportunities to go in depth on those items. But we know that sometimes there's a difference between what tests well and what people will actually buy. And I know that's a consideration. So, like, what did you hear from the testers? Maybe some of the subjective stuff that might make it into some of those articles, but might not. Like, what were people liking? What were people not liking? Like, what was just kind of the vibe of that? And what was some of the feedback from testers?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, we do test Scotty Cameron's. Year in and year out, Scotty Cameron's going to be subjectively one of the best feeling, sounding, best for looks, best for likelihood of purchase. It's going to be one of those that's extremely highly rated. We have 20 testers in the test. Almost every one of them is going to rate it highly. Whereas, for example, the T-Square TS912 is placing third overall. It probably ranked towards the bottom in subjective reveal.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that contrast of, and it's something that we believe in wholeheartedly, is just because a putter looks good, feels good, maybe sounds good, doesn't necessarily correlate to overall performance.
We did this several years ago. We actually had the testers rank every putter in the test, and the article's still up. And it's, you know, even though it was the data specific to that year, I think conceptually it's an evergreen thing where some of the absolute best performing tests, like you'd have a guy that was just lights out with a putter, and you say, all right, where would you rank this? Look, sound, feel, likelihood of purchase, and it would be like 29th out of 30.
Right.
Literally could not have putted better. And you'll hear things like, well, I don't putt well if I don't like the way it looks. And like, well, you just did. So, and it repeats itself year after year after year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, I can't remember exactly what putter was, but so we have everybody comes in, they're hitting 8 putts from 5 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet. We're reporting essentially how many 1 putts they have, how many 2 putts they have. And you see somebody who has, say, 5 to 6 putters in her keeping, and makes the largest amount of 1 putts with a particular putter, and then ranks it like 2 for like likelihood of purchase. And I'm like, you literally just made the most putts with that putter in this grouping, and you gave it a 2. Why?
Yeah. And it's interesting.
I don't like the way it looks. I don't like the way it feels. It's too heavy. It's too light. Whatever the case may be. And I'm just like, just made 4 more total putts with that putter versus the next closest one.
Right. Right. And it's like, do you, you know, I like the look and sound and feel of the ball going in the hole. That sound, to me, is the best sound any putter can make, is the little clink, 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 clink when the ball goes, you know, in the hole. And if it were a Like I said, if it were a shovel, I'd putt with that. If it was a 2x4 on the end of a shovel and it made more butts, great. But what do you think is in that? I mean, is that something, do you think people will move past that as they go? Because quite honestly, that was an objection, like, to lab putter, certainly as a beginning. And I got my lab putter in the box, and the DF3 that I've been playing around with is a phenomenal putter. I really like it. But I can totally understand why somebody go, yeah, I made a lot of putts, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that lab has done so well is we've seen it in testing where it performs subjectively. It's not among the higher rated putters out there, whether it's a blade, whether it's a mallet. And you are seeing, and really the performance of T-squared in this test is just only validating that even more. Like, even for a blade, this is subjectively appealing to majority of the testing pool, which is 20 testers, so it's a large portion versus the whole golf community, but the performance is being packed there and throwing subjective appeal out the window in a second. So,
interesting. All right, stick with us here, Phil. We got two questions we're going to finish with here quickly, and we're going to get your opinion on this as well. But before I ask the last question, Tony, tease us the wedge challenge. People need to tune in next week to get all the details on this. We didn't quite have time to roll it all out this
we're,
week.
We're teasing it.
Phil
so
might want to participate in this, too.
I thought we were talking about putters.
we're done with that. Come on now. We're moving on. So next week, we're going to kick off. It'll be the first in what we think maybe could turn into a series of no-putts-given challenges. We're going to lay it out for you. Going to give you kind of frame it, the full context of why we're doing it. Chris and I are going to take the challenges ourselves. We're going to open it up. If you guys want to challenge it, we're going to give away some stuff, some prizes, have a good time, and hopefully have a good conversation. Lots of fun. Come back next week.
Lots of fun. All right, last question we're going to finish on. This one, saw Brian Katrick, BK, dearly beloved BK, phenomenal radio host. I love listening to the show. They do with John McGinnis on tap with McGinnis and Katrick on SiriusXM. They do a phenomenal job. He had a hole-in-one this weekend with a Bridgestone Mindset golf ball. Tony articulated that it's just as good if you just put your initials on there, too. I guess that works. But the point was this. So you make a hole-in-one.
Really simple.
T. Calloway.
Only play balls that you can easily initial. That's my theory. That's my new
You
one.
Make a hole-in-one. Golf's tradition is that then you buy the beverages of whatever variety for either your group or anybody that's in the bar at the end or what. Every course is different in these type of things. So we're finishing on this question. Number one, are you okay with that? And number two, if you're not, what would you do differently? Philip, what do you got?
Ooh, all right. What do you got? For those that don't know, I did work at a country club prior to this job. So at the country club, there was a hole-in-one club that you could be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Which essentially, you make a hole-in-one, that happens. And I was actually in charge of, like, charging this back to the member.
Okay.
But for that day where they hit a hole-in-one, everybody who was living in that hole-in-one club would get charged $5. And that would essentially go back on the member's bill and cover the cost for drinks that day.
Gotcha.
And then kind of whatever was left over, they would actually get like credit towards their bill and golf shop credit.
Okay.
So
it's like a pooled insurance policy. So it's a thing. Okay.
My course did something like that back in the day. I don't do it anymore now, I don't think, but it was basically, first of all, it wasn't a club in that you didn't get to join. It was just course policy. Like, you were in whether you wanted to be or not. And anytime anybody made a hole in one, every member got charged $2.
Yeah.
So same basic idea, except you didn't have a choice. And I'm guessing that anything left over went back into the pockets of the golf course versus the member or the guy that had the hole in one. But same basic idea. I didn't have a problem with it. Cost me like $8 a year.
Yeah, see, so that I like that. I don't love the, hey, you make a hole-in-one all of a sudden, because I guarantee you there are some friends and people, and I have seen this, where they go straight top shelf or whatever. Oh, you can end up with, you make a hole-in-one and you walk home you know, $1,000 poor because, you know, because of that. It's like that. That's There's, ridiculous. That's not
you don't
okay.
you don't
want to
hit the shot of your life and then go home and have your wife yell at you. It's really like it's that simple. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Like I want to start a new tradition, which I like the kind of pooled insurance thing. I think that's totally fine. Pro Shop, some places will like then give out Pro Shop credit too, which I think is cool. But I think it's this: you make a hole in one, you get a plate of nachos. New tradition.
Okay, not bad. Or ice cream.
Keeping it simple.
That was going to be a second one, but I feel like
throw that one in there.
Yeah,
shouldn't cost you money to hit the shot of your life. Just should.
If somebody was present on the day of the hole in one and they were also in the hole in one club, they did get a free drink.
Oh, okay. So, see,
you know, there's been little caveats to it. You know?
That is a kinder, gentler, more humane approach to this. So I nominate you. So if anybody has any questions on hole in one policies,
will be in charge
how to do
of
that,
global
we'll make
hole
sure.
In one committee.
Yep, we're going to post Philip's cell phone number. We're going to post his cell phone number in the comments so people can just text him directly. I think that'll be good. Philip, thank you for popping on and giving us some feedback. It's going to be a great week of putter content and topics and all of those things. And until next week, again, like, follow, subscribe, all this stuff because we're starting challenges. But until next week, we're out.